AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. For at least the next few days, there will be no changes in the availability of a widely used abortion pill. Here's CBS's Michelle Miller.
The U.S. Supreme Court has temporarily blocked a lower court ruling that severely limits access to the abortion pill mifepristone. Justice Samuel Alito signed an order late Friday afternoon to put a five-day pause on the lower court's ruling while the justices fully consider the issue. The Biden administration and the maker of mifepristone filed an emergency appeal after a conservative Texas judge suspended the FDA's approval of the pill last Friday. The Supreme Court is giving all sides until noon Tuesday to provide written responses.
The Massachusetts Air National Guardsman accused of sharing top secret Pentagon documents remains in jail this weekend. Correspondent Willie James Inman.
Speaker Kevin McCarthy blamed the Biden administration for the leak and promised congressional action.
President Biden also said he couldn't predict how long the investigation into the leak would take, but he says he thinks the administration will get to the bottom of it quicker than anticipated.
The president arrived back in the U.S. very early this morning after a trip to Ireland. He spoke to reporters about many topics, including the debt ceiling debate, and was asked if he would talk with House Speaker McCarthy.
Of course I'll speak to him. Show me his budget.
Unless there's an agreement, the government will run out of money sometime between July and September. After North Korea flight tested a solid fuel intercontinental ballistic missile for the first time, Canada and South Korea are teaming up to strengthen security. Canadian Foreign Minister Melanie Joly.
We know that the reckless actions of North Korea are putting the region and definitely, of course, the country here and Canada's security at risk. So working together, we can make sure that we build this cooperative architecture.
Well, he wasn't hurt, but an explosive device was thrown at the Japanese prime minister during a campaign event. U.S. presidential envoy for climate, John Kerry.
He is a personal friend as well as somebody we admire very, very much.
Damaging winds, large hail, and even tornadoes are possible from northern Louisiana to central Missouri today. Weather Channel meteorologist Kelly Cass.
Now, it's not a 10, which is high on the scale, but still, it's a day you should be weather aware, pay attention to the changing weather conditions.
If you woke up this morning in a panic thinking taxes are due today, take a breather. You've got until Tuesday this year. That's the 18th because tax day fell on a Saturday and Emancipation Day, which is a holiday in D.C. You get a little extra time. This is CBS News.
Streamline how you hire with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
The SHA 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The federal infrastructure law has been in effect for a year now. Community leaders around Wisconsin are optimistic about badly needed repairs and improvements. Here's Mike Moen.
At the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, Zach Brewing says so far nearly $3 billion in projects have been announced with funding from the law. Most are transportation related, and Brewing says it's badly needed as many areas have backlogs for priorities like road and bridge repairs.
And so by having a real strong federal partnership in the area of infrastructure helps address some of the backlog.
The law will also provide states funding for clean water infrastructure and expansion of high-speed internet. The plan did have some Republican opposition, but has otherwise been hailed by political analysts as a bipartisan achievement. Despite the significance of the law, some of those analysts say it hasn't stayed on the public's radar, especially during the recent election. But supporters are still getting the word out. Megan Rowe is with Opportunity Wisconsin, which has spent the last year educating communities about the benefits of these projects.
Whether we're spending less on car repairs due to updated roads and bridges, having access to safe drinking water, or improved mass transit opportunities, this law is a once-in-a-generation investment in our state's infrastructure and competitiveness.
And as more projects are announced, Rose says it means additional well-paid union jobs for distressed areas. She says the long-term benefits from various improvements should particularly help rural areas and underserved communities. An interactive online map from the White House shows the projects so far are spread fairly evenly across Wisconsin. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
You're listening to independent programming that has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. To learn more and to see our entire broadcast lineup, go to civicmedia.us.
There are places I remember.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome back to Morning Cannolis. This is our weekly review, our analysis, our examination, our discussion of the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. My name is Jim Santel, and as always, we're talking with you this weekend about the major news stories that have happened, trying to provide some sense for them and explain again why they're important and what we should do in response to them. Always, always, again, focusing upon those fundamental issues that relate to justice and the promotion of it in our nation. Delighted to have you with us once again on this Saturday morning here in the state of Wisconsin and cities and towns and villages throughout our wonderful state. In this second hour of our being together this morning, I'm going to turn back to the major story that we talked about last week, which was this unprecedented event in the history of our nation. 240 years we've never had before, a former president brought into the halls of justice, brought into the criminal justice system as a result of a finding by a grand jury that he allegedly engaged in criminal conduct. We talked about this at great length last week, again, and a story that continues to be important to our nation to this day, including some important footnotes to that singular event. Recall well that Donald Trump was brought into the Manhattan Criminal Courts building, and there he pled not guilty. Not guilty to some 34 different counts of violations of New York law having to do with financial transactions and business records, and specifically the things that he and his lawyer and a fellow named David Pecker through the National Enquirer publications did to try to deceive, if you will, the American population right before the 2016 presidential election, specifically as a result of this scheme that the three of them put together. That is Michael Cohen, the lawyer fixer for Donald Trump himself, and David Pecker took at least one, if not two, maybe even three different stories that shed a bad light upon the, at that time, candidate Trump in anticipation of the election, and basically caught it and buried it. One of those had to do, of course, with Stormy Daniels, another one from Karen McDougal, another one from a doorman who was standing outside of the Trump Tower, all of them alleging that the now former, at that time future president of the United States of America had engaged in extramarital affairs. And in all of those cases, the president, the future president, Michael Cohen, his fixer, and David Pecker made this arrangement to pay them, in some cases, $130,000, $150,000, $30,000, depending upon the transaction, not only to catch the story that they were telling, but to bury it, to put it under wraps, if you will, to catch it and kill it, as we sometimes describe it, to hush it up. And it is those events that form the basis for the grand jury indictment out of New York that was announced again a bit more than a week or so ago at the arraignment of Donald Trump, again, the first time a defendant is a former president in all of the jurisprudence of our nation. Important to note once again, as we did last week, that this is not a federal investigation. We'll talk about that and where those are in just a few moments. This was a state investigation brought by a fellow named Alvin Bragg. Alvin Bragg, the DA of Manhattan, who had been investigating this particular fairly discreet set of events and focused in particular upon, again, phony invoices that the fixer, Michael Cohen, had assembled to try to suggest that these payments were, in fact, as a result, payments back to him to reimburse him for the payments he made to these other people, that all that was actually legal services. So he had put together phony invoices to Donald Trump to try to justify those repayments from Donald Trump to him. Also put together, the Trump Organization did, and Donald Trump himself put together checks paying off Michael Cohen for the payments he had previously made to keep these other people quiet. And also inside the Trump Organization ledgers, entries that also reflect falsely, that these monies were being repaid to Michael Cohen for the purpose of his legal expenses and legal fees and legal services, when in fact they're simply reimbursing him for the payments he had made to keep these other people quiet. That is the basis of the fraud that the DA alleges in this 34-count indictment. You know well that when the former president appeared in the Manhattan Criminal Courts building last week, he pled not guilty to all of those, as is common for defendants to do, and that therefore puts in play a number of different things. The judge before whom he was appearing admonished him not to engage in any conduct, any sort of oral statements who would intend to incite violence or civil unrest. We'll see how that plays out during the course of the next few weeks and months. We know as well that Donald Trump maintains that all of this, this entire piece of prosecution coming out of Manhattan, is not based upon anything real. He's called it fake. And he has said that the only reason that the DA has brought it forward was to interfere with the continuing campaign that he announced a number of months ago for the presidency itself, a campaign that plainly will continue into 2024, which could be also the year during which this case is tried. My own speculation is much more likely sometime into 2025, given the focus on this case, not especially all that complex, but nonetheless based upon the likely defense motions to dismiss, maybe to suppress some pieces of evidence, to attack basically the prosecution between now and the end of this year. All of that, a part of the pretrial process. Judge Merchan, who is presiding over this, they're actually called justices in New York, Justice Merchan, scheduling another pretrial hearing, another time for all the parties to be back again before him in early December of this year. And at that time, plainly taking some inventory of what happened during the course of the months between the arraignment and plea and that time. Presumably, a lot is going to happen in this case. Much of that will be in the public domain because these motions will be filed in the public docket. We'll be able to take a look at them. We'll talk about the substance of those. We'll be able to get a sense of what the judge is entertaining in terms of oral argument. He may, in fact, issue some orders granting or denying motions to dismiss in whole or in part. He may grant or deny in whole or in part some motions related to the suppression of evidence and other things related to discovery in this matter. And again, right now, highly likely, the prosecution has already given over to the defense all the information that it has assembled in connection with the investigation to this time. That is a part of the rule of law. That's a part of our due process system in the federal system, in the state system as well. The defense have a right not only to know the things with which they have been charged, but also to know the basis upon which a grand jury or a prosecutor has alleged violations of the law. That production being made right now by the DA to the defense team, and they will then look through that and file these motions. Well, all of that again happening, we know that in the wake of that, other things happened that derived very specifically, very directly from that prosecution ongoing. Even before the arraignment itself of a week or so ago, we know that there was an exchange, a fascinating and intellectually bankrupt exchange between Jim Jordan, who is the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, two other colleagues of his, including Brian Stile from right here in Wisconsin, one other chair of a committee in the House of Representatives, all of them sending requests to Alvin Bragg, the DA in Manhattan, for information and for discovery and for all the details, all the background behind this investigation. And again, in terms of our concept about rule of law and civics that we always talk about here, we need to think about the bankruptcy of those requests. That is, a federal official, admittedly, in the United States Congress, with no jurisdiction whatsoever over and with respect to a state prosecutor in the state of New York. No way can that particular kind of oversight be exercised by a member of Congress. And you know what? Those congressmen, they know that well. And so this is, if you will, an attempt not only to suggest that perhaps there's something wrong with this prosecution, the attempt to suggest that in and of itself, inappropriate and not illegal, they can plainly make the request, but appropriately denied by Bragg. He wrote back to the congressmen, the chairs of these committees, and said in very strong terms that you're not going to get this information. You've got no entitlement to it. You might be even compromising the legitimacy of this prosecution, including perhaps the rights of the defendant himself, Donald Trump himself, to a fair and decent trial at some point down the road. Bragg was very clear with them that they're going to get nothing, and wrote back in a letter that we've also talked about, telling them that the request is not only being denied, but telling them that in forceful terms. Well, this past week, there was a footnote, a more than insignificant footnote to all of that, because Jim Jordan, again, Republican from Ohio, has subpoenaed a former prosecutor who worked on the Manhattan DA's investigation into former President Trump's status, all of these things. And we know a good deal about that. His name is Pomerantz. He went on to write a book about his experiences in the DA's office. But the focus of what happened this past week is that Bragg then said, you know what, I've had enough of this. I've told them already they cannot get this information. He is opposing these requests for testimony from former prosecutors. He's opposing any requests that would come from the Congress. Why? Because there's simply no jurisdiction. There's no legal basis for members of Congress to be asking about a state criminal prosecution. Now, Congress might in fact have some oversight responsibility, and does have it, with respect to the federal Department of Justice, although even there, the United States Congress does not have the authority to get discovery, has not have the authority to gather together information put together as a result of a criminal investigation, the subject of an indictment. And again, we should anticipate that if Jack Smith ever does indict on the folk cases that he is looking at right now, probably the Congress will ask for that information too. They will receive a similar notice of rejection from the Department of Justice. All of this ridiculous. And Bragg, Alvin Bragg, has finally come to the end of his rope. And so the Manhattan District Attorney, just this past week, Tuesday, brought a federal lawsuit against Jim Jordan of Ohio, as I said. It's an extraordinary step under any circumstances. I'm hesitant to say unprecedented because we overuse that word an awful lot in this nation. But all of these things deriving from, once again, the presidency, the campaign, and the renewed campaign of Donald Trump. In a 50-page lawsuit brought by Alvin Bragg, now against Jim Jordan, pushing back yet again upon these requests by the congressional Republicans, alleging that they're interfering in his office's criminal case against former President Trump. The 50-page lawsuit, again filed in the Southern District of New York, that's one of the districts, of course, a federal district court there in New York, accuses Jordan of what's called a brazen and unconstitutional attack on the prosecution of Mr. Trump, and also a transparent campaign to intimidate and attack the DA himself. Again, all this in the wake of the announcement of the indictment itself. When we come back, I'll tell you a bit more about that lawsuit and other lawsuits that have percolated up just this past week in America, and in particular in the state of New York.
Milwaukee. You have to check out Mobcraft Beer, the world's first crowdsourced brewery where they turn your ideas into beer. Stop in their downtown tap room to try flagships, seasonals, limited release crowdsourced brews that you won't find anywhere else, and more. Mobcraft also has a pizza kitchen making craft pies with the freshest ingredients. And enjoy their amazing tap room featuring over 20 constantly rotating draft lines, indoor and outdoor seating on their dog-friendly patio, and a killer view of the Milwaukee skyline. Mobcraft Beer, located in the heart of Walker's Point in Milwaukee. For more info, head to mobcraftbeer.com.
Max Inc. Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. And by the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article on the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
Weather brought to you by Next Tech Glass, your hometown experts for auto, residential, and commercial glass repair and replacement. Please visit nexttechglass.com. That's nexttechglass.com.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Cloudy skies with a few peaks of sun this afternoon with a high of 78. Southerly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Cloudy skies tonight. Scattered thunderstorms likely. Lows level off around 53. Cloudy tomorrow. Scattered thunderstorms likely. High of 59. About an inch of snow tomorrow night through Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 68 degrees.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
We are back on Morning Cannolis. Thank you for once again joining me in our discussion of all things rule of law, justice, and government in America. Talking right now about this perhaps not unknown, unprecedented lawsuit, but certainly atypical lawsuit brought by a state prosecutor in New York State against a sitting congressman, the chair of the House Judiciary Committee. And that lawsuit again brought in federal court to stop the Congress, to stop this congressman from Ohio from interfering in, or at least attempting to interfere in, the prosecution of the former president. The complaint goes on to say, rather than allowing the criminal process to proceed in the ordinary course, again, this according to Alvin Bragg in his civil lawsuit against Chairman Jordan. Chairman Jordan and the committee are participating, Bragg says, in a campaign of intimidation, retaliation, and obstruction. He adds that the district attorney's office has received more than 1,000 calls and emails from Mr. Trump's supporters, many of them threatening and racially charged since the former president predicted his own arrest last month. Jordan has, of course, responded to all of this, including the lawsuit, at least not formally, but at least in the public domain. He said, first, they indict a president for no crime. That, of course, is not true. We've got a grand jury at least found probable cause to believe that there are 34 different offenses that the former president committed in the state of New York. And then he goes on to say, then they sue to block congressional oversight when we ask questions about the federal funds they say they used to do it. Once again, inappropriate attempt to conduct oversight, not the kind of thing that any judge presumably will enforce. Indeed, on Tuesday afternoon, the judge in the case, a woman named Mary K. Viscoso, declined to issue a temporary injunction that the DA had wanted, proposed by Mr. Bragg and his lawyers, and that would have prohibited any enforcement of the subpoena sent by Jordan to compel Pomerantz, this former prosecutor, Mark Pomerantz, from testifying. Instead, the judge who's now hearing this piece of litigation, this civil litigation in federal court in New York, ordered that Jordan's lawyers respond by April 17th and that a hearing in the case be scheduled for April 19th so that she can resolve all of these matters. So more things coming up in the context of that civil lawsuit. Wildly brought by the DA, and I say wildly just because of the need that he perceives to go after and try to stop this interference by the Congress. unnecessary in the normal course of business if indeed everyone, including members of Congress, understood their proper roles. And once again, I believe that Jim Jordan, Brian Stile, others who are requesting this information appreciate that fully, but are doing this perhaps in part to satisfy some of their constituencies. They know. They're bright enough to understand that there is no oversight by a member of Congress, even a chair of a committee, over a state prosecution unrelated to the work and the oversight of the Congress. And so that case goes ahead. One of the things that happened in the wake of the investigation and prosecution of Donald Trump, not to be outdone. Also this past week, more litigation, this time brought by Donald Trump himself. We know well, based upon my description that I've repeated this morning, but also from our previous discussions, you know this too, from the news reports that you have read and consumed, that one of the principal fact witnesses being presented first to the grand jury, almost certainly to the trial jury, if this Manhattan case goes to trial, and it probably will at some point, maybe no time soon, but we'll go to trial at some point. One of the principal fact witnesses has got to be Michael Cohen himself, right? We know that Michael Cohen was previously indicted in a federal lawsuit, not a state lawsuit, a federal lawsuit coming out of the Southern District of New York. He was sentenced to 3 years imprisonment for his involvement in this, served most of that at home because of COVID. But he is a convicted felon. And despite his appearance on many, many news outlets these days, he is a convicted felon. He happens to have had this very close and intimate relationship with the now former and perhaps future president. We don't know. But as a result of his involvement, his providing information to the federal authorities and, yes, indeed, to the state authorities, to Alvin Bragg, the Manhattan DA, this indictment comes. Now, it's not to say that he is the exclusive witness. There are other witnesses out there, and a lot of this has to do with documents. It's undeniably a document case. But Michael Cohen will be the person who will come forward to explain the process, will give sort of the interstitial ties between these documents, explaining how the Trump Organization worked, and affirming the rightness, if he does testify accurately, and presumably he will, the rightness of the allegations in the complaint. That is, that these payments were made to hush up these people, that the invoices that he, Michael Cohen, created were false, that the checks written to him were not, in fact, to compensate him for legal services, but instead for the purpose of reimbursing him for the payments that he made to the Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal and the doorman, and indeed that the entries made into the Trump Organization ledgers, those are also false. He's going to come in, and he's already told that to the grand jury, told that to investigators. That will be a part of his trial testimony as well. So what happens this past week? Donald Trump, as he often has done, has himself made access to the courts. And in particular, he has decided to sue his former lawyer, Michael Cohen, his former fixer, Michael Cohen, to the tune of $250 million. Donald Trump asking that the court award him $250 million, again, in the wake of the prosecution by the DA in Manhattan. This, of course, all about the legal matters going on there. Trump indicating that because of the cooperation that Michael Cohen has unmistakably provided to law enforcement authorities, both federal and state, presumably his testimony for the grand jury, that Michael Cohen, as a part of that work, has violated the trust and the duty and maybe even the attorney-client privilege that existed between, at some point, Donald Trump and Michael Cohen. And we know from our past discussions that that privilege did, in fact, exist at one time. We know as well, and this will probably be a source of some discussion, that because of the crime fraud exception, that gets busted through, does not maintain its strength if, in fact, you're talking about crime. And so we know that the lawsuit that is being brought by Trump against Michael Cohen is to try to intimidate him, probably, but more importantly, also to send this message to people out there that he thinks, that is, Trump thinks, that this lawsuit generally is fake, which is what he has said in the past. We'll talk more about that and yet more litigation going on in the courts of America just this past week when we come back right after this break.
Daytrippin'.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
CBS News Brief. Women are protesting outside of the Supreme Court to keep access to that drug that's part of the abortion pill amid a court battle over a challenge to rescind the FDA's approval of it 23 years ago.
You cannot undo 100 studies that show that mifepristone is safe and effective, and the majority of the public supports medication abortion especially, but abortion rights and access writ large.
That Massachusetts Air National Guardsman charged over the leak of classified Pentagon documents remains in jail this weekend. This woman is his neighbor.
Let it be. You know, this is America. Keep us safe. You got to do the right thing. You got to keep America safe.
Severe weather on the way, says Kelly Cass at the Weather Channel.
It's going to be a busy weekend in terms of storms, especially across the Mid-South and Mississippi Valley. Yesterday, we had some reports of large hail in southern Kansas. Hail and high wind, that will be the primary threat today again.
CBS News Brief. I'm Allison Keyes.
Ready for a journey to Flavortown? Head over to Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill. They've been serving up the best food in Wrigleyville for 8 years and counting. From their famous smoked chicken wings to their tempura battered cheese curds, every bite is a trip to flavor heaven. And with hospitality that's second to none, you'll feel right at home. So why wait until after the game? Rev up your taste buds and join them at Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill at 3478 North Clark Street in Chicago. Check out their menu on Facebook.
Don't settle for big box service and pricing when it comes to your flooring. Choose Straight Edge Flooring for quality and personalized service. A family-owned flooring company, they offer full-service flooring solutions from material to install, including on-site dust-free refinishing. Straight Edge Flooring installers are CFI certified and fully insured, with free in-home consultations to simplify your project. Choose Straight Edge Flooring. Log on straightedgewi.com. That's straightedgewi.com. Or call 414-779-8931 and make your vision a reality.
It's time to take your fitness to the next level. Join Brew City CrossFit in downtown Milwaukee. Brew City CrossFit offers a variety of safe, fun, and effective daily workouts that will challenge and transform you. Whether you're a beginner or a seasoned athlete, their skilled trainers will help you reach your fitness goals. You can even schedule a free trial class by logging on to BrewCityCrossFit.com. What are you waiting for? BrewCityCrossFit.com. Brew City CrossFit, Milwaukee's number one CrossFit gym.
Accidents can be life-changing, no matter how careful you are. But with Gingras Thompson & Wachs, you're not alone. For decades, they've been fighting for the rights of people just like you. They'll let you focus on your recovery while they handle the legal complexities. If you or a loved one has been hurt or killed due to someone else's negligence, contact them now. You may deserve compensation.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson & Wachs, GTWLawyers.com.
It's game day at Jim's house, and the spread is impressive.
Mike's already done some damage with the hot wings, and now he's dropping back and going deep for another slice of pizza.
I sure hope he brought the Pepto.
Mike knows that Pepto-Bismol provides fast, five-symptom relief from unexpected stomach upsets. He's no rookie.
The way he's throwing back those nachos, he's the GOAT.
Be ready for game day with Pepto-Bismol.
When you have nausea, heartburn, indigestion, upset stomach,
diarrhea,
use as directed, keep out of reach of children.
Embroidery Professionals Plus, how may I help you?
Yeah, I'm needing to get some patches made for a club I'm in. Is that something you guys do?
Absolutely.
I'm not sure how to get started.
Well, I'm happy to walk you through the process. Custom patches could be made in any size or shape and can be embroidered or printed. To get started, email your design.
Embroidery Professionals Plus has custom apparel specialists ready to work with your club, too. Two Wisconsin locations in Deerfield and Eden. Embroidery Professionals Plus, apparel you love, service you crave. Oh.
Joining me for this discussion this morning about all things rule of law, justice, and indeed civil litigation going on in the courts of America. Right before the break, we're talking about this new lawsuit brought by Donald Trump against Michael Cohen, his former attorney, now turned government provider of information and witness, presumably, not only before the grand jury, but also certainly in the trial coming up by the Manhattan DA prosecuting Donald Trump for these 34 counts. Right before the break, I was talking with you about the request made by Trump, and I misspoke in part. I've got it by half. In fact, Donald Trump is not seeking $250 million. He's seeking $500 million against Michael Cohen as a part of his lawsuit again for allegedly breaches of their trust, their confidence, and the damages that Donald Trump has allegedly suffered as a result of Michael Cohen's behavior. That lawsuit, again, going forward, almost certainly going to be dismissed at some point upon a motion to dismiss. No merit to that. Probably almost certainly done by Donald Trump and his lawyers, again, as a way of pushing back a bit against the federal, against the state prosecution by the Manhattan DA. Certainly also an attempt, as Donald Trump has often done, to intimidate Michael Cohen, not likely to be effective given Michael Cohen's posture these days, both in media and beyond that, but also to send a message probably to Donald Trump's supporters that he feels, Trump feels, that the prosecution of him by the Manhattan DA is unfounded and seeking $500 million from his former lawyer to compensate him for the damages done by Michael Cohen. Fascinating lawsuit, baseless lawsuit, but nonetheless brought this past week, even as the DA, again, suing members of Congress, leaders of Congress, to try to get them to stop the enforcement of subpoenas purportedly in an oversight capacity that does not exist. Let's talk about two other things also involving Donald Trump from just this past week. We know as well that in addition to all these other issues, criminal matters, civil matters, we know that Letitia James, who is the attorney general of the state of New York, many months ago brought a civil lawsuit, again, not a criminal lawsuit, but also alleging violations of New York law by Donald Trump, by the organization, and by his family members. This was the case involving valuations of property, misstatements about the amounts of money that those properly are valued at, misstatements for tax purposes, insurance purposes, transactional purposes, all of those based upon the suit by Letitia James again last year, claiming that Trump and many members of his family misled banks and financial associations, businesses, by giving them false information about not only his net worth, but also the values of all these assets, mostly in the form of real estate, hotels, golf courses in particular, identified in this civil lawsuit. That continues to go on, called pretrial discovery in that matter. And we know that a number of months ago, Donald Trump submitted to a deposition in the context of that particular lawsuit. All the reports were that for most of that deposition, Donald Trump exercised what he has a full-blown constitutional right to do, which is to exercise his right under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution not to incriminate himself. And apparently he did that perhaps as many as 400 times during the course of that initial deposition being conducted by the Manhattan DA. Well, he was back in Manhattan. And just on Thursday of this past week, again, previous Tuesday, a week ago Tuesday, there for his arraignment in the criminal case brought by Alvin Bragg, now back in New York, once again in Manhattan, this time for undergoing a second deposition in this civil litigation brought by the Attorney General of the state of New York. And we don't know much about what happened. We do know that Letitia James, and here's the $250 million request, that's what she is asking of Donald Trump, in addition to a request that they be barred, that is the Trump family, barred from ever again being responsible for a corporation under New York law. She's asking for all of that. So all of this discovery, the depositions of the past, the deposition that took place just this past week, all of that as a part of the appropriate pretrial discovery investigation, if you will, process that will at some point lead up to a trial, could be resolved based upon an agreement between the parties. But we'll see. We'll see again. We know that the Trump Organization sometimes has resolved cases brought by the Attorney General. Recall well that Trump University was one of those things that she shut down effectively by virtue of a civil lawsuit that she brought. We also know about the Trump Organization itself. And its philanthropy, so-called philanthropy out there, also shut down by her as a result of her making claims, making allegations that were ultimately shown to be true with respect to the false and fraudulent nature of the conduct of these organizations. This lawsuit, again, going after the very financial integrity, if there is such a thing, to the Trump Organization, and seeking, again, money damages and also a prohibition of any continued supervision out there. The former president submitting to a deposition in New York just this past week. We will not know anytime soon exactly what he said. His attorney said going into that the former president will not this time be invoking the Fifth Amendment. He has a complete right to do so. Of course, we also know that when you do that in a civil case, which you've got a right to do, the court, a jury, a judge can appropriately infer bad things from that decision not to talk about things that might incriminate you. That's a part of our law as well. And so we don't know exactly what the former president said to the deposition takers from the attorney general's office this past week, but we do know that he submitted to that deposition and that plainly Letitia James is very aggressively continuing to pursue that major lawsuit, a civil lawsuit, again, in the New York court. And yet there's one more. There's still another one that's out there. And that is the lawsuit brought by a woman named E. Jean Carroll. We've talked about this before. This is the lawsuit brought by E. Jean Carroll, a woman who alleges that way back in the 1990s, Donald Trump, in a New York store, Bergdorf Goodman, sexually assaulted her in a dressing room. And she made that allegation in the context of some writings that she had done, some radio interviews, and she said that this had happened. While Donald Trump was the president of the United States of America, he decided to go public and specifically say that E. Jean Carroll is a liar. This never happened. She is completely making this up. This is all false. Made some other very derogatory comments about her physical appearance that are also offensive at many, many levels. E. Jean Carroll doesn't stand for that. And she turns around and she files a lawsuit alleging defamation, that is specifically that the president at that time in the Oval Office, in the White House, defamed her by suggesting that she was not telling the truth. For all sorts of reasons, that case goes in and out of federal and state court. It is a fairly complicated matter having to do with the Federal Tort Claims Act. And indeed, the appellate courts, the federal courts, have not yet sorted out with clarity exactly whether or not the president can continue to be a named individual defendant or whether or not the United States of America is the proper party defendant. Putting all that legal nicety to one side, the important thing to know is that this matter is going to trial on April 25th, later this month. The judge has said we're going to trial, and in the course of a pretrial proceeding, just like the other pretrial proceedings that we have talked about in connection with other cases out there, one matter did come up. And it has to do with who is funding the lawsuit brought by E. Jean Carroll. Okay, reporting previously that it was being funded either through private funds or nonprofit organizations by people who are legitimately supporting her advocacy on this. An allegation just this past week that indeed a founder of LinkedIn and a major Democratic fundraiser and donor was in fact the fellow, at least one person, who is supporting this particular civil litigation. E. Jean Carroll in the past has not been especially clear about the funding source for that. And as a result of some of the pretrial matters that came out of this this civil litigation, prosecuted and defended by the parties to this, the judge this past week said, you know what, just because of this allegation that there may be some new information, maybe some misrepresentation, arguably, by E. Jean Carroll about who is funding this lawsuit, he's permitting E. Jean Carroll to be deposed by Donald Trump's attorneys for 1 hour sometime in the near future about the sources, the money sources to support this litigation. Now, what it was important to know. Is that especially relevant to the fundamental allegations about defamation? No. And the judge said just as much. He said, you know what? This is probably not relevant, probably not coming in. The sources of funding of a civil litigation piece, usually not relevant, not material to the actual presentation of the facts in the case. But nonetheless, he said it might go to her credibility. So I'll give you a limited opportunity to quiz her on this in the course of a deposition. But beyond that, the trial going ahead after many, many, many months of litigation, pretrial litigation, again, with respect to proper parties defendant and all sorts of discovery. We know that E. Jean Carroll has also invoked a special component of New York law that basically resurrects old and statute of limitations barred cases, including a case of sexual assault. And so she has invoked that newly passed law as well. That proceeds on a parallel track with this matter as well. Look for the lawsuit of E. Jean Carroll to be in the courts next week as this matter goes forward. Unlikely we're going to hear again a lot about the results of the deposition that she is going to submit to with respect to the sources of the funding of this litigation. But we do know, again, that all of that litigation going on as all of this happens in New York, some of it related to the Alvin Bragg prosecution, some of it not. But again, keeping our courts very, very busy as all these matters go ahead. Let's talk then about another major development in the litigation of America in American courts just this past week, and that has to do with the Dominion lawsuit. Let's talk again about the predicates for that lawsuit, which again, we've chatted about at great length in the past. We know that in a prior piece of litigation brought by Dominion voting systems in particular against Fox News, allegations of what? Allegations of defamation. How does this come about? And what do we know about this case? Again, we've chatted about this in the past. Worthwhile to understand what's going on because that case, too, going to trial as soon as next week in front of a judge named Eric Davis. Significant that Eric Davis conducts a pretrial hearing in this matter just this past week, giving rise to some renewed allegations of improprieties by the former president's attorneys with respect to discovery. Before we get that here, however, again, remind all of our listeners what this case is all about. Allegations by people like Sidney Powell, by like Rudy Giuliani and others out there on behalf of the former president that the 2020 election was stolen. That the results coming out of the Electoral College were wrong, that it was a result of great fraud, and that the Dominion lawsuit, the Dominion voting machines in particular, upon which those allegations are somewhat based, that the Dominion voting machines were responsible for it. Now, not only did those allegations were they made in the public domain, but they were plainly repeated by what entity? By Fox News, by its major on-air talent, repeatedly over the course of many, many weeks and months, that Dominion voting systems were responsible for the big lie, were responsible for the stealing of the election in 2020. Of course, all of that a lie, that they did not do any such thing. And in fact, Dominion turns around and says that because you have not only stated these lies about the 2020 election, but attributed to us, Dominion voting machines, responsibility for that, you have defamed us. You have said something in the public domain that is not true. You know it's not true. And indeed, as we know from the discovery that has percolated up and out because of certain pretrial filings that have been made, we know that the Fox talent, including the leadership of that so-called news organization, indeed knew that the things that they were saying were not true, repeating these allegations by the Trump organization about the stealing of the election. Knew that? Thought it was ridiculous, thought that Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani were peddling falsities generally, and they understood that. So what happened most recently? Well, the judge presiding over this case, again, recently granted summary judgment. And what he said basically was this, that with respect to two of the fundamental issues, he's going to take from the jury one of those issues. He's going to take from the jury a question about whether or not the statements themselves were true or false. And he made the finding that those statements made by Fox News on the air about the election were indeed false. So we're not going to argue about any of that, he says, during the course of the trial. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the other thing that this presiding judge did just this past week inside this pretrial conference, again, giving some disconcert to the defense lawyers in this case defending Donald Trump. We'll talk about that right after this coming break. Stay with us for that discussion. She loves you.
We'll be right back. The Civic Media team would like to say congratulations. More than 200 Wisconsin businesses and nonprofits are receiving a free advertising campaign through our one-day $1 million advertising giveaway. If you missed out, our local sales team would still love to help you with your own campaign. Go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. Again, civicmedia.us and sponsorship. New and still growing. Advertise today with a Civic Media network of radio stations.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
Weather brought to you by Nextech Glass, your hometown experts for auto, residential, and commercial glass repair and replacement. Please visit nextechglass.com. That's nextechglass.com.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
Chance for scattered thunderstorms this afternoon. Otherwise, a blend of clouds and sun. Highs level off around 78. South winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Scattered thunderstorms likely tonight. Lows around 53. Cloudy. Scattered thunderstorms again tomorrow. High of 59. About an inch of snow tomorrow night through Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 68 degrees.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog.
We are back for our final moments together on this Saturday morning, April 15th, 2023. Thank you for your time this morning, your attention, and your focus on these major issues in law, government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Chatting right before the break about this major lawsuit brought by Dominion Voting Systems against Fox News, alleging defamation. Defamation by on-air talent, and indeed known by on-air talent not to be true, when stating that the election was stolen, the 2020 election, advancing the so-called big lie, and suggesting, more than suggesting, that Dominion Voting Systems machines were responsible for accomplishing this fraud in the election. Dominion Voting Systems turns around and sues for defamation. A very high standard, a very high standard. We've talked about this before once again. New York Times versus Sullivan says that in order to be successful against a journalism entity, a press, the media, electronic, print media, you've got to establish actual malice. And that was the standard established in this New York Times case of many, many years ago. And what that basically means is you've got to not only know that the information you're providing is false, you have to do it with sort of a reckless disregard, if you will. You've got to know it's false. And the standard, because it is so high, basically protects errors made by journalists. We often anticipate that if they make errors, they will get on the air or print retractions of those things. They don't have to do it. But the notion is we want to advance and want to protect First Amendment rights of journalists, which is a very, very good thing under the First Amendment. And Fox News, arguably, one of those protected under the First Amendment, as well as they maintain they are a legitimate news organization. And so this very high standard of actual malice, it says what it means and means what it says. That's the level of proof that you have to establish. And that's why most defamation cases against journalist entities are not successful. It's really tough to show that a journalist sat down and purposely, knowingly set out to misstate the truth, knowing that it was wrong, knowing that it was false. And of course, here we've got one of the few cases, perhaps in all of modern American jurisprudence and litigation, where that may in fact be the case. From the discovery coming out of this trial, we've got all these emails back and forth, including some involving Rupert Murdoch himself, in which all of these folks behind the scenes say, hey, we know that what we're saying is false. We're doing it. Why? Because of ratings. We know that if we say something other than this, Our viewers, our listeners will depart for other news organizations. We know what happened in the wake of our calling the election, the 2020 election for Joe Biden and telling Donald Trump that he lost Arizona, for example. We know that many of our listeners, our viewers fled from Fox News at the time. So we won't do that again. Instead, we're going to tell them what they want to hear. And many of the pieces of discovery that have come out have confirmed the knowledge inside the Fox News organization by the on-air talent, by the news producers, by the organizers, and indeed at least one of the news producers behind the scenes fired when she said, you know what, we've got to take a look at this more clearly. And indeed, the 2020 election was not stolen. It was not the product of fraud. And she no longer, of course, works at Fox News. All those kinds of things coming out of the discovery in this case to this date. So this past week, as this matter moves to trial, again, not on the question of whether or not the statements themselves are true or false, that the judge has already said dispositively, clearly, in his grant of motion for summary judgment, we're going to tell the jury these statements were false. The only thing, members of the jury, that you have to take a look at is whether or not they were repeated on air by Fox News with actual malice, with a purpose, again, to mislead, to hide the truth, knowing that the truth is something other than what we're saying out loud. Again, under these circumstances, probably not a great burden to overcome. Dominion actually is somewhat disappointed that the judge did not take that issue away from the jury, too. The judge, perhaps deferring to fact finders, said, no, I'm going to let the jury decide that key issue about actual malice. But the judge this past week, again, in a pretrial conference, his name is Eric Davis. He's a part of the Delaware Superior Court, where this case is pending. He has a pretrial conference with all the parties, again, in anticipation of the lawsuit and jury selection coming up, yes, that's right, on Monday in Delaware. And during the course of this pretrial conference, he says that he is imposing sanctions on the network and would very likely start an investigation into whether Fox's legal team had deliberately withheld evidence in this course of the pretrial matter. He scolds the lawyers for not being straightforward with him and plainly with the attorneys for Dominion itself. How did this come about? Well, this rebuke and this very strong statement by the judge that the Fox News team, if you will, is going to face sanctions and is facing sanctions for hiding evidence comes about in this way. A number of instances in which Fox lawyers had not turned over even more relevant evidence in a timely manner. The evidence including recordings of the Fox News host Maria Bartiromo talking with former President Trump, Sidney Powell, and Rudy Giuliani. Dominion said there's been turned over only a week or so ago. Again, very relevant to the allegations in this complaint. What does Eric Davis say about this? He says that Fox would have to do everything they can to make people available to be deposed on these latest revelations now coming out from Fox, but coming out untimely. He says, and if you don't do that, it will be at a cost to Fox. Davis says he's going to weigh with whether any additional sanctions should be placed on Fox. He also said he was very concerned that there has been a misrepresentation to the court. That is a very bad thing. That doesn't bode well for the attorneys for Fox as they go forward. He says this is very serious. And David Brooke, a lawyer for Dominion, told the court that they were still receiving documents from Fox with the trial, again, just days away. Brooke said, we keep on learning more about relevant information from individuals other than Fox. And to be honest, we don't really know what to do about that. But that is the situation we find ourselves in. And that's the reason why the judge is so very frustrated by all of this. Discovery should have been conducted, completed a long, long time ago. Again, this threat against Fox and the lawyers, sanctions imposed upon them, the requirement that Fox produce individuals for depositions about these lately produced revelations coming out, not only of the Bartiromo interviews with Powell and Giuliani, but other matters also out there. All of this also prompting the judge to do this, to say he may also start an investigation into whether or not Fox's handling of these documents was purposeful and even details about Rupert Murdoch's corporate role. That recently revealed during the course of these discovery disclosures. Very concerned about these things happening at the 11th hour, almost the 12th hour before the trial begins, and indicating the judge does that he's going to conduct an investigation. He says he might even appoint a special master to conduct that investigation again. That's not good news for the attorneys. That's not good news for Fox News generally. But the trial begins next week with jury selection in that major case, Dominion Voting Systems versus Fox News, defamation, likely to produce a result, a finding of defamation based upon everything we know. We're going to be covering that story and many other stories in the lifeblood of America, cases civil and criminal in our federal and our state courts, every single Saturday morning, including next Saturday morning again. Join me at that time once again for Morning Cannolis. Between now and then, focus on all these important pieces of news in our nation, and join me again next week for some analysis of those. Thanks, everybody, and have a great week.
I should be sleeping like a log, but when I get home to you...
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Veterans, whatever you're going through, don't wait. Reach out. Find resources at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach. Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.